Oh, yeah, it's the World Cup song, isn't it? Look at that. The World Cup's going on, isn't it? I watched a little yesterday. A little Brazil game before the final started. Nick Ashew on the fan. You got Germany playing today with the Netherlands. Got a few games. The World Cup will kind of ramp up as time goes on. You know, it's like the early games, other than what the U.S. did Friday night and their 4-1 win over Paraguay. Like, yeah, people are going to kind of get to a point where it's, you know, starting to get more and more interesting. And, you know, now that the NBA is done, the Stanley Cup final will be done soon. Everybody will kind of gravitate to the World Cup. It's just that's usually how this stuff goes. But I'm excited. I love it. It's a big event. And, you know, if the U.S. is as good as they looked in that first game, it's going to make this ride a lot more fun. And maybe there's another underdog story. Just had that with the Knicks last night. And now you're going to get maybe another one with the U.S. winning some meaningful games in the World Cup as we go forward. Isn't it crazy, though, the heel turn for Victor Wembanyama? You want to talk about a complete 180 in terms of image. That is Victor Wembanyama. I mean, he has become the villain, and he became the villain real fast in the finals. Look, I am not going to say that he's a dirty player, but he was playing like a dirty player. And if that continues, it's going to be really hard for you to get to a point where you shake the narrative of you being a dirty player. I mean, the jumping at OG Anunoby's knee, the clear flagrant foul last night, sticking his leg out and right in the landing space where Jalen Brunson is, which is a clear flagrant foul, but we all know that gets called a flagrant foul. He's at the limit. He gets suspended the next game. So the extender tried to extend the series as much as possible. But you see this so much. And, like, I don't want to hear the, like, well, he's real lanky and long. And no, man. Like, you watch the effort from him at times, and it is clear he is making dirty plays.
It reminds me of Grayson Allen when he was at Duke.
And that's the thing. That's the first thing I thought of was Grayson Allen. All of a sudden, Victor Wembanyama turned into a Grayson Allen-type player where these are not basketball plays that he's making. I'm sorry. They're just not. And you watch it more and more, and it's so much less about his abilities on the court as a player and his ceiling and his potential and his work ethic and all of these things. And now he looks like an immature, prima donna, whiny 22-year-old that isn't getting what he wants on the court, overly emotional, and playing like a dirty player. Wes, do we have some of his post-game audio? Do you have that ready?
I can pull it up real quick.
All right. Let's get what Victor Wembanyama had to say after the game, because there's one, too, that was just so petty at the end. And I will say this. It's difficult for a player after losing in the finals like this to go out and be level-headed and have no, you know, just and answer questions about how you lost and how things went wrong. I always keep that in mind. It ain't easy to do. But there's also a level of professionalism that you do have, because that is part of the job. Here was Victor Wembanyama after the loss.
Appreciate y'all. See y'all. Never.
Like, what is that? See y'all never to the media? Like, what does that mean? He's just, look, I wasn't one of the people that was like criticizing with the crying after losses. I'm like, guy wants to win. That's great. But we hadn't gotten to this point. Now you're starting to watch more and more, and this is how the internet's good, right? People will find the clips. Here's Victor Wembanyama. You know, oh,
it's just weird, dude.
So emotional. Doesn't it feel like it's like...
He's being a child.
He's just emotionally immature.
He is.
He really is.
How old is he? 23?
22. He's 22.
You lost at 22. You got 15-plus years left. You might get one. Relax.
And look, don't get me wrong. It's not easy to get back there. They've got a great team. I always encourage, you know, you want to see players that want to win. But it's what was going on the court. It's the clear flagrant fouls. It's the immaturity. It's the
win in a humble way.
Yeah.
Or lose in a humble way.
It's just, but I mean, you see in these videos of him in the tunnel where they're losing games, just one game in a series, and he's like falling on the floor crying. And for a while, I was like, you know, I'm not going to criticize a young kid for, you know, being upset when he loses. Like, I'm going to kind of give him some space. I'm not going to be one of those dudes. Like, I'm not going to be like, oh, guy cried. Like, I'm not that guy. I'm not going to do that. But you're starting to see some early signs of somebody that really does lack maturity. And if he's going to be the face of the league, look, you're not going to make everybody happy. You're always going to have people that aren't fans of yours. People love LeBron. People hate LeBron. Whatever. Like, that exists, okay?
Bryce Harper was that way. When he came into the league,
he had a villain aspect to him. You're right. And some of it will just be maturity, but it may not be. It may be who he is. But, you know, the lasting image of this series, besides the putting his foot under Jalen Brunson when he's landing and, you know, all the other stuff that we've seen, and it's going to be the I'm in your head pointing in his dome to Mitchell Robinson in game four when they're up 29 or whatever. I know it was 29 at one point. I don't know if it was 29 at that point. But that whole thing is going to be a lasting image, because after that game, it's him with a hood on, pissed off that they blew that lead. And I don't blame him at all for feeling that way after that loss. But, like, that's going to be part of it. It's like you're running your mouth a lot. You got real cocky. And this team is young, inexperienced, and showed their inexperience the entire series. I mean, listen, the Spurs won, the Spurs led in 72% of the time. The time that they were on the court, 72% of the time, the Spurs were in the lead in these NBA finals. And yet, they only won one game. That's a level of inexperience, and that's a level of immaturity, and making very poor decisions in the second half and fourth quarters of games. I mean, we saw when they blew that 29-point lead, when the Spurs blew that 29-point lead, they were shooting threes left and right, up big. Like, what are you doing? Run the clock, run things down, get to the rim, try to get foul. You're getting all the foul calls. Get to the rim. Do that. And instead, this villain energy that you're getting from Victor Wembanyama felt like it really backfired. And listen, it worked for a little while in game four, right? Because obviously the Knicks were a mess in the first half of that game. They're down almost 30, and you're looking around going, should I even watch the second half of this thing? What is going on in this?
When they were chucking up threes when they lost that 29-point lead, that it just shows you the lack of leadership in that locker room.
Yes, yes. And listen, they're all kids. And even Mitch, you know, like their head coach is... he's young. Like, Mitch Johnson's young. They have a young head coach. And some of it is going to be on him getting better as a coach and learning more, but it's also the rest of the team. Like, they're all going to grow together. That's why I always say young teams hit walls. The Spurs just didn't hit their wall in the NBA Finals. But these young teams that have a lack of playoff experience, they have this inexperience overall. And it's a huge jump from 34 wins to 62 wins. And it's like, oh my God, they're going to be here forever. Yeah, they might. But you got to go through the process. Usually it's second-round losses. I thought they'd lose to the Thunder in the Western Conference Finals. And they almost did. They had to win on the road in Game 7, and they did. And they got a lot of experience and a lot of exposure, and they did a lot of things well in these NBA playoffs. But they hit their wall in the NBA Finals. And even times where they had those leads, they blew a lot of leads. To lead 72% of the time in the NBA Finals and win one game is complete mismanagement of games, period. It's immaturity, it's a lack of experience, and it's making poor decisions. And they will get better from this. They will. And I'm telling you, like, I want to root for Victor Wembanyama. Like, I want to root for him. I can't after these finals, man. I can't watch this guy and see anything likable about him. And I hope he grows, and I hope he gets more mature, and he doesn't try to play this dirty villain card that he certainly leaned into in the NBA Finals. And you can't tell me it's anything other than that. I'm sorry, those were not basketball plays that we're talking about. If that's who he's going to be as a player, he's going to be nothing but a villain around the league, and it's going to limit his star power. Because you can say what you want about LeBron, but I'd rather have a guy that flops and whines to refs than a guy that's trying to take out somebody's ankles when they're shooting a three. Sorry. There's a difference between the two. I'd much rather have my face of the league be LeBron James in the way that he acts and Victor Wembanyama in the way that he acted in the finals. It backfired on him. I mean, it was constant comebacks from the Knicks. The Spurs get under their skin in the first half of Game 4 and blow that. And if this is who he's going to be, it's going to limit his star power. He's going to be a great player. If he stays healthy, we've never seen anybody that's physically built like him. It's all there. The work ethic, the uniqueness of like working out with monks and this, you know, the mindfulness and all. It's like he is a very unique player and has a lot. He checks all the boxes on the court, off the court with that until we saw what happened in the finals.
I don't want to see him being compared with Draymond Green.
No, no, no. We're not there yet. But he has to be careful, Wes, because like that can change. That like it could happen.
Fans, they remember. They don't forget quickly.
Well, how can you forget after the way he approached these finals?
Well,
in
especially
so many
the way he shoved
games?
Brunson, what was it, game three?
Yes.
Neck area.
Those are dirty plays, period. And he's laughing at him. And he's just, he's become this really arrogant 22-year-old that has a lot of talent and has a lot of potential, but it's going to get in the way if he's not careful. This could be something where you look back and go, look how much he's grown. He's more likable now. Because I have nothing but respect for the Spurs franchise. It's one of the most well-run franchises in sports. And, you know, if there's any franchise to develop a great player, it's Victor Wembanyama. And we all know the NBA wanted him to go there, too. He wanted to be, even be there. Like, it all worked out. But this is an opportunity now that he's got to figure it out. Because if you want to play this card, if you want to be that guy, there's a difference between you're a killer on the court. You hit clutch shots. And yeah, you run your mouth to fans. Cool. There's another when you're taking guys and grabbing their heads and throwing them on the court and sticking your foot under their ankles when they're coming down in their landing zone, which is a clear flagrant foul. It's going to hurt his image, and it's going to hurt. And maybe he doesn't care. And listen, that's fine. If you don't care, you don't care. But it's not good for the NBA, because the NBA's got to figure out who the next face of the league is. Who's going, like, that? It matters to them. It's a star-driven league. You want storylines. You want compelling rivalries between players and between teams. And Victor Wembanyama is right at the top of that list. Not to mention, he is unique. I mean, he just does not look human. There's a reason why he's the alien. But there is a chance now for him this offseason to really think about the way that he approached this, because that ain't going to work. And I want to root for him. I want to root for him. But I don't. And I think a lot of people, if you looked on Twitter last night too, throughout this, it was a lot of the same thing. A lot of NBA fans are looking at this going, if this is the dude, if that's your next hero, you're in trouble, NBA.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same mentality that we were just talking about with the Knicks fans, quote, Knicks fans out in the streets. You know, they're kind of, Wemby can ruin this for himself.
Yes, he can ruin it for himself, just like Knicks fans that are making every Knicks fan look like an idiot burning school buses. Yeah, it's the same thing. But I do want to take into account that he's 22 years old, because I made some dumb decisions when I was 22. And Wes, you're like, what, 19? So you probably make some dumb decisions,
almost,
too.
In a couple weeks, I turn 18.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard when somebody has the expectations and the spotlight on him and you're 22 years old. But listen, there's also, like, understanding what's right and wrong and trying to take out a dude's ankles and doing what he's done to Jalen Brunson and the way that he's acted in these finals. That's beyond just like, oh, you know, I don't like the way he acted in a press conference. I can get over some of the pettiness in press conferences, and he wasn't that bad. It was just like an annoying comment at the end. You're just like, what are you, 12?
I'll see you never.
Okay, and then you're probably going to see a lot of these media members again grow up. Like, yeah, it's just petty.
I don't remember LeBron being this way.
No.
He would complain, but never the dirty hits or the moves.
I mean, Jordan complained. Let's not pretend that, like, every star doesn't complain to refs.
Sure, they have the right to do it. And the refs might believe them. It's definitely helped them. But I don't remember LeBron doing this to other players.
Not like this. LeBron was very polished right away when he got to the league. He was very polished and mature. Look, you can say what you want about, like, I take the whining to refs out of it, because, again, every player does it. LeBron was pretty mature for his age when he got to the league. And, again, I'm sure people will be like, well, do you remember this time? Yeah, of course, it's not going to be perfect. But, again, I know Wemby's 22. But there's a difference between petty in press conferences, or, you know, maybe some guy annoys you on the court and there's a back and forth. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the physical things that he did that were dirty plays, period. It is not an argument. It is undisputed. They are dirty plays. And if he's going to be that guy, it's going to hurt his image, and it's going to get to a point where people are like, I hate this guy. And it's just, listen, if you don't care, you don't care, but it's going to hurt your growth and your brand. Everybody's got a brand now. Anybody can be a brand. NBA players absolutely can. And if you are willing to hurt that, to play this way, that's going to be part of your legacy, right? Like, it's the truth. Kevin Durant, part of his legacy is going to be how petty he is, but it ain't dirty. There's a difference. Kevin Durant's real petty. And we know the burner accounts. And we know all this. He's also one of the greatest scorers the NBA has ever seen. People aren't going to talk about him being a dirty player. There's a difference between petty and social media, or how he interacts with the media. That can get kind of forgotten as part of your story, or at least, like, downgraded. Dirty player, there's way too many highlights of that, and there's way too much. And that's what Victor Wembanyama's got to watch out for. Nick Cashew on The Fan.
Every team you face so far, you guys always found a way to get over the top eventually. What did you learn about how hard it is to win the finals against this Knicks team where they kept coming up with answers? Brunson just could always score no matter what in the end.
I learned one of many things I learned is the margin of error is very, very thin. Our domination stints are absolute. We absolutely dominated for most of the series. But our errors, our mistakes, are punished so hard that we can't have ups and downs like this so much, you know. The ups are okay. The downs, it's the reason we lost.
Victor Wembanyama there after the Spurs lost in five games to the Knicks. He was absolutely the villain of the series, and dude needs to grow up. I want to root for him, but he is right. They actually did dominate a lot of that series. The Knicks were down in 72% of the minutes that they played on the court and yet still won the finals in five games. And that's on a young, inexperienced Spurs team and an inexperienced star and, look, an inexperienced head coach. And not all of it was obviously on the head coach. A lot of it was just player execution at a lot of points in these games. And by the way, the Knicks almost blew this game too last night. They missed a lot of free throws late. It's not like they were clutch. There was a lot of missed opportunities. I mean, there was a wide-open three that Josh Hart missed late, and, you know, he was missing some free throws. OG Anunoby missed a free throw, and, you know, there was a layup missed by Josh. Like, a lot of this stuff was this game was still very close until those final minutes, and then they're down, you know, it's a four-point game, and Wemby hits a three off the side of the backboard, basically, and you're like, okay, here it is. The Knicks are going to win this title, but, you know, look, Victor Wembanyama's got to grow up. And maybe this is something that does, right? Like, this is the adversity that turns him into somebody that's more of a mature player and a better leader and, you know, all of that. Again, he's 22. So we have to take some of that into account. Is like, he's 22 years old and has the weight of an entire league kind of put on his skinny little shoulders right now. And we'll see where he is when he's in his late 20s and he's 30. And it's, you know, is he still going to be the same player that's trying to take out ankles? And because he was dirty. He played like a dirty player. He played like Grayson Allen at Duke. That was the exact vibe that I got, and that's bad. It's not what you can't have the face of the league have that image. It's one thing if he runs his mouth. It's another thing if he's, you know, maybe jawing at other guys on the other team and maybe, you know, complaining to refs a little bit. Guess what? Every star does that. It's another when you're doing the things that he did specifically to Jalen Brunson, which it was obvious. Like, he's targeting Jalen Brunson on some of these plays. Because that's sort of his rival on the other side. It's Jalen Brunson and Victor Wembanyama, the two biggest stars here, two polar opposites in a lot of ways. Wemby's a great player, and he's so unique, and he'd be so great for the league. But you can't have this image. You can't. Like, you can get away with this if you're Dennis Rodman. You can honestly get away with it if you're Draymond Green, who's going to be a Hall of Famer, great player. But it also did hurt Draymond Green's image. And look, some guys may not care, but like, that's part of your legacy. And I know it's hard to judge everybody in the moment and assume that that's everything, but Victor Wembanyama is going to have to shake that. Like, he's going to have to shake that moving forward. But I'll tell you what, I saw a list here, and of course it's gone because this is what Instagram does. But it was the list of, you know, just all of the coaches the Knicks have had since 2001, of course. And then there's another video of Spurs and Knicks fan fighting. So listen, there's a lot of that. I get it. I don't know what was said in these fights, Wes, and I know you hate it, and I hate it too. It's real dumb. It's real dumb, but I mean, there is
a bummer to see.
It is. No, listen, I get it, right? Like, nobody encourages that. It's a lot of people using it as a chance to start fights, and it's people using it as a chance to essentially say, you know what, I'm going to go out there and take advantage of this, and I hate it. I hate it for everybody else, but, you know, in reality, it's always going to happen. All right, so here's a list. So think about this. You want to talk about the height of dysfunction. And because, right, continuity matters. Continuity matters in sports from coaching staff to front office. And you're always going to have some turnover. Somebody's going to get promoted. Somebody's going to go somewhere else. Guys are going to get traded. The only loyalty in sports is you, the fan. That's it. You're the only one that's truly loyal in sports to everybody else. It's a business. And look, I mean, it's understandable to a point. But just the list of Knicks head coaches, the last one to like really have success and the last one to go to the NBA Finals was Jeff Van Gundy. You know, he was there from 96 to 2001. From 2001, when Don Chaney took over for the Knicks as their head coach for 3 years, they've had 13 head coaches. Think about this. Jeff Van Gundy's gone. It's Don Chaney, Herb Williams, Lenny Wilkins, Herb Williams again as an interim coach. He just was an assistant that was there forever. Larry Brown, another. I mean, they had Lenny Wilkins, Larry Brown, Hall of Fame coaches. Isaiah Thomas, Mike D'Antoni, Mike Woodson, Derek Fisher. That was a disaster. Kurt Rambis, Jeff Hornacek, David. That stretch of Derek Fisher, Kurt Rambis, Jeff Hornacek, and David Fizdale was just bumbling buffoons as their head coach. We're only up to 2019. You had Mike Miller, a random assistant that became their head coach for a short period of time from 2019 to 2020. Then you had Tom Thibodeau finally create some level of stability for this team and get them to a point where they're at least a playoff team, getting to an Eastern Conference Finals, and then Mike Brown takes over and wins and gets them to an NBA championship. So things can turn around. And listen, this doesn't mean that the Knicks are going to be a team 5 years from now that we're talking about is still an NBA contender. Like, the East could shift in a bunch of different ways. The Wizards are in a spot where, yes, they are going to be, if they continue in this direction, they're going to be in that conversation in a couple of years of fun team like Spurs or Thunder that then becomes, oh, wow, they can actually, they're starting to put this thing together. I'd argue the Pistons are right in that spot. The Pistons have some work this offseason, but that was the one seed in the Eastern Conference, all right? And that's a team that lost in the second round, as a lot of these teams do. Young team, big jump. But remember, the Pistons went from like 17 wins to tripling their win total the following year. It was a new head coach, J.B. Bickerstaff, but you know, the Pistons made a big jump. The Wizards can be in that spot where there's a big jump. And the East as a whole is relatively wide open. I mean, Boston's going to be in the conversation. They'll probably make some moves this offseason, too. The Knicks are going to be in the conversation, but this roster is going to get massively expensive moving forward. The Pistons, I think, will be in the conversation. They need to add another guy alongside Cade Cunningham. I think that's going to matter for them. The Magic may get in on the Giannis sweepstakes this offseason, and we may know that in 9 days as we get ready for the draft, and he gets moved probably by the draft at this point. The Pacers are going to be back and healthy next year, and remember, they were just in the finals last year in the Eastern Conference Finals before that, and there are going to be younger teams. What do the Heat do this offseason? Not even a younger team, but just a team that's going to be aggressive. Like, there's a lot there, so when you get this opportunity, you got to lean in, right? Because it doesn't guarantee that you're going to be back there. And listen, if I had to, just in a confidence factor level and where we're currently set in the trajectory of these teams moving forward, I think the more likely team to get back to the finals sooner is probably the Spurs over the Knicks. Now, the Spurs have to get through the Thunder out there, but this Knicks team is going to be tough to keep together. It's going to get more expensive, and even for the Knicks, even with how expensive those tickets were, and even with how all the money they made, where they can go into the second apron and deal with maybe a Karl-Anthony Towns extension, OG Anunoby is going to be due an extension at some point. Jalen Brunson's going to no longer take a pay cut, and I don't blame him one bit. He took $100 million less. I mean, this roster is going to get really expensive and tough to keep together if you're the Knicks, so they're going to have to figure out what down the road also looks like, which means the East is going to be a wide-open conference. Like, if you were to look at, let's say, 3 years down the road, in which conference you think still has similar teams at the top of it that we had this year in the NBA, it's absolutely the West with the Thunder and the Spurs to start. Maybe the Lakers kind of make a jump because it's more about Luka and Austin Reeves, and they've made some other moves that kind of balance out that roster versus doing whatever it is to get a lot of guys there for make LeBron happy. In the East, I'd argue the Celtics because they've built some of this roster from, you know, draft all the way through, but Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, are they going to stay together? I mean, there's Jaylen Brown trade rumors. I don't think it's going to happen, but there is some level of frustration that's there. I think more than likely that roster relatively stays together. But, you know, remember the Celtics had them, I think they had like $1 billion in payroll that was due to them before they, you know, Jason Tatum got hurt last year and they gutted a lot of this roster this offseason. There's a chance the Knicks are going to have to do what the Celtics did. Celtics paid a ton of money. Yes, they drafted some players, but they also paid a lot for other players and made trades and, you know, kind of built with like a hybrid of how you build a champion. What does that roster look like in a couple of years? Again, the East is much more wide open moving forward, where yes, like the Thunder are going to continue to have an expensive roster, but they got a lot of picks. They draft well. They can just say, we're not going to pay you. We're going to instead, like maybe they trade Chet Holmgren, get some salary cap relief and get younger again. The Spurs right now, young team. They're not going to have to worry about that right now. Down the road, yes, but not right now. The East feels a lot more fluctuated, where 3 years from now, it could look totally different at the top. It could be maybe still the Pistons, but it could be also then the Wizards. Maybe the Pacers are still there. Maybe the Magic make a jump. I mean, it's It's a lot different in the East than it is in the West right now. It's a tough path to go through the West and win an NBA championship. So, gives a bright future to the Wizards. I'm telling you, I'm going to keep saying it. I'm going to speak this into existence. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan. We are officially into the NBA offseason, which means start looking at the Wizards and what this draft is finally going to look like. Look, I don't think the Wizards are trading out of one, but I think they do look around and say, hey, anybody got last-minute deals? This NBA offseason, I'm telling you, I don't know if we're going to involve the Knicks now. So the reports were that, you know, the Bucks were going to wait until the end of the finals to get all of their offers for Giannis, because they thought maybe the Knicks would get involved. That's a tough spot to be in now for the Knicks. You win the title, and then you trade for Giannis, and they're not going to necessarily gut the roster, but they're going to trade more draft picks. They would have to trade, likely, Karl Anthony Towns, which is something they have to think about. Are you going to extend him? Are you going to move forward and do that? Like, what's this roster going to look like? It's going to be expensive. It's also a reason why you got to have some of those draft picks moving forward. The Knicks have to be looking towards the future as well, because there's going to be limits to what you can do in terms of how expensive this roster is, even with deep, deep pockets. Like, there's a certain point where there's only so much that you can do. I don't think the Knicks are going to be involved in Giannis. I think you're going to see a lot of other teams that are there. And, you know, I don't think it's going to be the Wizards, but I wouldn't be surprised if Anthony Davis gets moved before the start of the season. And I don't know if it's necessarily around the draft, but look, like, there are going to be teams now that say, like, we've got to go all in at this point. Right? Like, especially, let's say, in the East. And, like, what if, again, in the West side of things, I look at the Nuggets and say, what if they think Anthony Davis is the rim protector that they need, even if they get 50 games, that's going to keep, you know, Nikola Jokic happy? I'm not saying that's the right choice, but what I'm saying is there are teams that do this. So, you know, I think the Wizards could be involved in a lot of trades, even from a secondary perspective, right? You see these 3- and 4-team trades. The Wizards have the space to maybe absorb some salary for a year and take on another draft pick. Because remember, with the Wizards front office having those ties and the mindset to the Thunder and the way that they've built, it's not just about building through the draft now and developing players. It's also, hey, 3 or 4 years down the road, we're going to get that bonus draft pick. The Thunder have 2 draft picks in the first round of this draft that do not include their own, which they don't own at the end of the first round, in one of the most loaded drafts we've ever had in the history of the NBA. That's a little luck, but that's also foresight. That's being able to look ahead and say, we're going to also have to pay some guys. Let's have these first round picks available to us, and maybe we'll get lucky and they'll fall, you know, higher in the lottery. And which, by the way, the Thunder had a chance to have a really high lottery pick in this draft. They could have the number one pick. So if you're the Wizards, and maybe there is a part of this season where a team is saying, hey, we got this guy in the last year of his deal. We need to clear cap space. We'll give you a future first-round pick if you take on his salary for a year. They're still in the spot where they can do that. Now, you don't want to commit 2 and 3 years down the road, but the Wizards have a lot of long-term decisions that they're going to have to make. And some of it might be retooling even this offseason a little bit, where Trae Young and Anthony Davis were available at the moment, but that doesn't mean that they're anyway part of their future. Anthony Davis doesn't want to be there. Trae Young's not going to make this team better. I think he's going to make them better than 17 wins, but he's not going to make them a title contender. And they have to think about what his extension's going to look like, because guess what? He's going to pick up an option and head into a contract year with the Wizards and probably look really good. And if I'm the Wizards, I would trade him at the peak of his market. We've got a resume with Trae Young, and we saw in Atlanta there are limits to what he can do as a player. And yeah, you could be like, well, look at what we got from Jalen Brunson. It's not the same player. Not at all. This is from a leadership perspective. This is from a teammate perspective. And he can do all the things he wants. Says like, hey, I'm a good teammate here. Go Wizards, blah, blah, blah. The Hawks were a better team when Trae Young got traded, period. They were 28-15 once he got moved. And they were a team that looked good in the first round of the playoffs until all of a sudden the Knicks said, no, little brother, we're going to mush you. And they did. And they mushed their face. And then they just got run off the court. But, you know, the Wizards have a lot of flexibility this offseason. A lot. Anthony Davis does not have the value that he once did in the trade market. But, look, he's a guy that, I don't blame Anthony Davis for saying, like, he's never said, like, I hate this organization. He's looking around as a guy that's 45 and divorced going on dates with 25-year-olds. Like, this is, you're fun and you're young. And, like, our lives are a different points in it. We're on different timelines here. Anthony Davis knows he doesn't have a lot of years left in this league, and he's dealt with a lot of injuries. And the Wizards are young and up-and-coming team. So if he doesn't want to be a part of that, move him. It's not even a criticism. Like, some people are like, fine, he doesn't want to be here. Whoa, whoa, whoa. let's not get arrogant. The Wizards have a, still, like, you got a lot to prove here as an organization. You're doing the right things, but you still have a lot to prove. So let's not look at this as like, Anthony Davis, fine, if you don't want to be here, fine. Get something back in return for him. And if he's out there to start the season and looks good, well, the stock raises, and there are going to be more teams willing to trade for him. I think that's the more likely scenario, unless you get a really good offer. The Wizards don't have to move him, right? It's like Brandon Ayuk without all the drama. The 49ers don't have to release Brandon Ayuk for a while. They can just be petty about it, but the Wizards wouldn't be being petty. They would get Anthony Davis out there, similar to a C.J. McCollum or, you know, Chris Middleton. Or when you had these veterans, you knew they weren't going to be there, right? You just knew. And C.J. McCollum was the ultimate professional. I remember talking to him at media day. We sat down. It's like we all, like, everybody knew. He knew. He's a great guy, great leader. We had a great conversation, but, like, all of it was like, hey, I'm here to help this team while I can. Yeah. He knew the assignment, and he got sent to a team in Atlanta that made the playoffs, and he deserved it. But now the Wizards are in that next step where they could use more veterans. They could use guys that aren't just young players, but you don't have to. You just don't want to show that you're going back the opposite direction, and that's what's important. So moving somebody like an Anthony Davis or Trae Young has to be for assets and return. And don't get mad if the Wizards make those trades and it's mostly for picks, because those picks can be valuable moving forward. Especially now, see, here's where this is all going to change with the lottery and the way the NBA's formatted this with, you know, the top three lottery odds, or three worst teams are going to have odds that aren't as good as the teams below them and all that. Like, they continue to make this complicated. But what it's actually going to do is going to make draft picks that are first-round picks with teams that might be middle of the pack a couple of years down the road actually more valuable. It's not like, oh, we got to trade with a team we know is going to be at the bottom of the barrel in the NBA, because that may not work. There is more value in trading for first-round picks down the road with the chance. Again, you're rolling the dice. I get it. But you have a chance to then take those draft picks and turn them into something better if the lottery then works your way versus not working your way. Because free agency is harder now to work with. The NBA's made that more complicated. The trade market might work for the Wizards. Again, they're going to have more of the space to absorb some contracts and, you know, be a part of deals that help attach some first-round picks or whatever. They could be involved in a lot of different things. I don't think they're going to move much of their young core unless it's a really big deal. And honestly, if I'm the Wizards, I wouldn't. Like, if Giannis was available and, like, they have assets to make that trade, but is that really what you want? The timeline, again, is different. He wants a championship now. Get guys that are all on the same timeline, building and growing together. Thunder and Spurs, I will say it and I will keep saying it because that's how they've been built. Everybody's on the same timeline. And if you bring in, again, you got to have some veterans. Like Harrison Barnes has been with the Spurs forever. His timeline was win a championship and want to win it now. But, you know, there's a difference between Anthony Davis and Harrison Barnes even. To a point. Harrison Barnes had a solid career. You know, you got to have some veterans that are in there, but it's going to be a little bit different. It has to be a kind of everybody relatively there versus I got to win a championship now. So I think the Wizards could be really active this offseason. I do. And, you know, it's a really, really good spot for them to be in. Nick Ashew on The Fan. Get a little more into the World Cup, right? Stanley Cup Finals still got to wrap up, and then it's World Cup, and that's kind of it. Eliminate the NBA Finals from the mix. Knicks win the title. Still surreal to say that. That's just crazy, man. I mean, it is. You got Germany and Curaçao playing today. Netherlands and Japan. Actually, I'm really looking forward to that game. I love the World Cup. Like, I totally recognize that, like, I would be LARPing, as Wes and I have talked about, and I talked about yesterday on the show, and I learned that, and I'll use that throughout the week on the shows, too. LARPing, that's going to be a thing. But, look, I grew up a Knicks fan. It's my childhood team, so I ain't faking it. I'm serious. But, like, I will helicopter in to the World Cup and be that guy.
You're supposed to.
Yeah, like, honestly, that's what it is. Don't get me wrong. I know there are people that are diehard soccer fans. That's awesome. You are, like... But there's a difference, and I've seen this with certain fan bases before, and it drives me insane. It drives so many people in sports insane, whether it's media or just a fan, where it's like this, you weren't here through it all. You don't belong here. Well, shut up. Like, okay, great, you were there first. It's like people with dubstep back in the day. Oh, you like dubstep now? I loved it since it was underground. Okay, like, shut up.
But it's every 4 years, it's we come together as the United States, and we're playing an event to try to be the best in the world. What did we go through? The last 3 years, there's nothing going on. You know?
That's how it's supposed to be.
Some of these players are playing in the Premier League. Okay, who cares?
Right.
They're playing. Now they come back to the States and they're competing for us.
Wes, it's the people that are just like, well, you don't watch the Premier League. You don't watch soccer enough. And you know, you just call it soccer. You should call it football. And it's like, stop being pretentious. Put your pinky down. Shut up. Like, really.
Yeah.
To grow a sport, you want as many people in there as possible. And look, hockey fans do this too. And I've seen it firsthand. And it's annoying. There are some, like my brother is a diehard Caps fan. Hockey first for him. I'm NBA first. Football, like, everybody knows that about me. All right. Like, I did a Caps post-game show for a year. I'm an NBA guy. I loved it. I love that team. It's not my first. I mean, it's not the sport that I've been immersed in is the most in my career or as a fan. And look, that's cool. But like, there are like hockey fans that would be like, hey, look, we're just glad that you're interested in the sport, welcoming you in. That's how it should be. Not the, oh, you haven't been here since the beginning. Please leave. You don't belong here. And you're not talking about our sport the way that we are. Hockey fans do that, not all. Soccer fans do that, not all. But it doesn't help your sport, dude. You want it to be successful. If you want soccer to be more popular in this country, welcome in the bandwagon fans. You know what helped the Nationals years ago when the Nats started winning? You know how you build a fan base? Success and bandwagon fans. That's it. It helps. But then you stay on board, right? Like, if you became a Nats fan during their World Series run or even leading up to it those couple years before, stick with it. That's part of being a fan. I get it. It may not be as fun, but you're still a fan. Don't be like, well, now I'm a Mets fan. Oh, what? Well, first off, I don't know why you make that choice, but, you know, that's probably not the best choice. But, like, I can't stand that. The World Cup is, it's an event, and it's also, like, different than the Olympics in the sense the Olympics is also an event. And, you know, obviously winter and summer are 4 years apart, but it's really 2 years for Olympics in general. But it's a lot of sports and a lot of storylines. For the World Cup specifically, it's a U.S. soccer team. It's either men's or women's. And in this case, obviously now it's the men's U.S. men's national team. And it is one sport. It is one team. Everybody is together on the same thing. Unless you're, you know, from Brazil and you're in New York. Well, you've seen the videos, by the way.
Yeah, I saw that.
Brazil fans that are there for the Brazil game, and they're getting tours of New York in the middle of, like, the Knicks game.
There, and there's officers walking with them.
Yes, which honestly, probably good, because we saw a lot of the stuff that happened, and it's just unnecessary. But like again, this brings countries together, it brings people together, and just go to a bar and watch a World Cup game if you've never watched soccer in your life, and just go where people really love it. And maybe it'll turn out that you love the sport and you want to watch Premier League, or you want to watch the MLS, or you want to watch whatever, CONCACAF, Bundesliga, La Liga, whatever.
Ivory Coast.
Anything.
It's great. Yes. It's just I was in the Navy Yard a couple days ago when they had their game. I went to the Nats game, but the Nats game was delayed, and USA fans were flowing into Walters, into the bullpen. It was great to see. We all come together and rooting for one team. I got to go watch the WBC down in Miami with the Dominican Republic and Venezuela and a couple different teams. That was great seeing these different countries traveling. And just the entire stadium, having their chance, and they're all together rooting for one team.
And you know what? Like, there's levels of fandom, right? Where, yeah, you run your mouth and it's like playful trash talk to another team or another team's fans. But it's like, it's when it gets to the point where it's just like violent. You're an idiot. Like, that's really all it comes down to, is you're an idiot.
And the good thing here, we're on the same side for the most part.
Right. You are. It's true. It's right. Like, how much World Cup do you think, Wes, you're going to watch? On average, is it going to be on in the background? Is it you'll dabble? Is it as it goes on
in the background? You know, yeah. I'm not doing much today, so I'll watch some of that Germany game, like you said, the Japan and Netherlands play. Why not? I'll watch some of that. Be able to talk about it with you on air. You know, why not? I mean, it's every 4 years for the men's. I guess the women's are in a few years. We only get this once in a while, so why not enjoy it while it lasts? And it's in the U.S. You know, they're playing in the U.S. or in Canada, Mexico City. So it's. It's good that it's, our part of the world.
Yeah. And look, I grew up playing soccer. I mean, it was a point where it was like, do I want to go play for a D3 school or do I want to just, go and, so it was like, I grew up playing it, but it's not like I believed I had any sort of future with it. So I didn't like pursue that kind of thing. But I loved soccer since I was like 4 years old. I love playing it, but I'm not going to pretend that I watch, Yeah, MLS consistently, Premier League or that type of stuff. I love Ted Lasso. It's a great show. Can't wait for season 4 to come out. But like, I recognize the popularity of the sport, but I'm not going to pretend that I'm somebody that is, you know, dives into it on a daily basis, on a yearly basis. It's the World Cup, and it's a big event, and I want to be a part of it. And I think that's what everybody, that's the whole point of a lot of this anyway. You know, it's on at some point. It's just, it makes the summer more fun because you've got like mid-season baseball, and that's it. Once the NBA draft is done, we've got baseball, if there's no World Cup or any other big event, you know, Olympics, whatever the case is.
Yeah, you know, I didn't feel that, you know, I'm a big baseball fan, work for MLB Network. I enjoyed people who were tuning into baseball. The World Baseball Classic had a crazy amount of views, more than they had previously. And it's great that people are tuning into the games. And, you know, you probably have kids who now want to play baseball. The same thing here with soccer. You know, it's their first sighting of the sport, and the whole country is behind each other, and it's good to see.
As a baseball fan, obviously somebody that played baseball as well, I don't get the vibe that you haven't been around here. You're a welcome in if you... Yeah, like that's how you should approach it,
right? I like going to games, actually, with my buddies who, you know, they played basketball, and they enjoy going to Nats games. It's fun to hang out with them, and, you know, they ask questions, and same thing I would do if I went to a soccer game with them.
I can't stand the pretentious fan. You weren't here before, so you can't be here now. Like, okay, it's one thing if it's like Taylor Swift, who's pretending to be a Knicks fan for one game. We all know that ain't the case. She was rooting for the Cavs when she was with Travis Kelce. I think they were playing the Knicks, too, if I remember correctly.
Yes, you know. She was rooting for the Cavs.
Yeah, so it's fake, and she's LARPing. LARPing,
it's,
you know?
I've been to so many college football games, like Ohio State, Virginia Tech, great entrances and stuff like that. And the World Baseball Classic, I'm telling you, I went into this Dominican Republic and Venezuela game, and I thought, my goodness, like this is legit. I mean, this is sold out. They have dedicated their entire week and month to this WBC, these fans. They have traveled from different countries to come watch their country play.
Yeah.
It's great.
And it's, you know, that's what makes all this fun. You're right. The WBC is another great example. It's a similar idea, you know, as what the World Cup is, and that was their goal. So... I'm looking forward to it. Just having it on, even if it's like it's on in the garage and I'm outside doing stuff, like I'll watch it, you know, it'd be fun. You want to have some sports even in the summer, but sometimes it's nice to watch stuff you're not like overly emotionally invested in. I'm not emotionally invested in Netherlands and Japan today, but I'm gonna watch it. It'd be cool, you know, till this apparently there's big storms coming too. I don't know how it's gonna be in DC, but I know Annapolis
again
is gonna be there's big thunderstorms coming at some point, so, you know. All right, Nick Ashew on the Fan.